This is podcast number 162 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I want to introduce you to Orison Swett Marden. I've had the loveliest and most inspiring guest stay at my home the last couple of weeks. It's a minor detail that his body was laid in the ground nearly 100 years ago. He's been filling me with his words of wisdom. If you were paying attention, you'll see that I've been sharing a few of those words the last few days in my Facebook posts. He saw you mothers 100 years ago. He knows the very foundation of our national life is laid in the home, and the wife and mother is the center, the mainspring of all true home life. He confided in me that our wives and mothers have as yet hardly entered the outer chamber of the beautiful edifice of the ideal home of the future. It is the holy of holies of evolution, and in it lies the very secret of human progress. The highest civilizations have scarcely as yet glimpsed the possibilities of home. He told me he believes the time will come when our children will be taught to consider beauty as a most precious gift and regarded as a divine instrument of education. For he said beauty is a quality of divinity, and to live much with the beautiful is to live close to the divine. Every beauty in any form refines and elevates character. I told him that is happening right now through you in your homes, and he smiled. Sadly, I told him I have a lot of things piling up on my to-do list and other guests who I've kept waiting, and I have to make room for them. He understood, and he said that I have an open invitation to invite him back anytime I want. Still, I didn't want him to go. I told him it's such a shame that he, who influenced so many millions of lives for good all over the world, should be practically unknown in our world today. But I told him I'd like to remedy that, and that I wanted to tell you moms his story. So we stayed up together last night, way into the late night hours, so that he could share his story with me, so that now I can tell it to you. I almost forgot to tell you his name. His name is Orison Swett Marden. His sweet mother died at the age of 22 when he was only 3 years old. While he didn't get to keep any pictures of her, his entire life he had a vivid recollection of her beautiful face and her auburn hair as she tucked him into his bed at night. His grief-stricken father, a tall, rugged, 6'2" man, took on the role of father and mother in their backwoods home in the hills of New Hampshire. He not only carried on his duties of farming, hunting, and trapping, he took care of all the household tasks of cooking and cleaning and sewing and caring for the three little children left behind. Orison cherished the memory of the little Christmas outfit his father stayed up late to sew for him. He loved his father. But one day, when his father was out checking on a bear trap in the forest, the trap sprung, and it brought down a large tree upon him. He managed to drag himself home, but he died a short time later. Orison now had no home. He was separated from his sisters, this little boy of 7, and sent to homes who took him in as the hired boy. He had to earn his keep. He would pass through 5 such homes before striking out on his own. Even as a young boy, he was cuffed and whipped, starved, worked to the limits of human endurance, abused and insulted. There was no one to give him comfort or love or answer his questions. Yet it was out of the bitterness of his own experiences, his joyless childhood and the utter starvation of body and soul, that he was able to learn the glorious secrets of real happiness. And one of those secrets was the gifts of nature. He told me, "Everything in nature seemed to speak to me to try to make up to me for my homelessness and loneliness. I loved every bit of it. Often in an ecstasy of emotion, I would throw my arms around the trees and hug them. They filled me with a sense of the very presence of God, and I felt that I could read his thoughts in the flowers, in the grass, in the trees, in the birds, in all the beauty he created. Something spoke through all these things to me, gave me assurance and hope, and in a measure satisfied my hunger for love. When out in the sunshine, under the blue sky, I could not believe that I was left quite alone in this great universe just because my father and mother had left me. It did not seem right to me that I should be cut off from communication with all who had any interest in me. Indeed, I fancied that I could feel the pulse of the unseen life, and that I could communicate with the spirit, the reality of my father and mother through the things I loved so much. This love of nature was a special refuge. I only knew that I was happy when out in the fields or in the woods, listening to the birds and watching the butterflies and the bees gathering honey from the wildflowers, whose fragrance and beautiful colors delight my heart. He added this story from his adulthood. I was going through the Yosemite region. After riding 100 miles in a stagecoach over rough mountain roads, I felt so utterly exhausted that it did not seem possible for me to hold on to my seat while we covered the 10 more miles that lay between us and our destination. But we toiled on and at length reached the summit of the mountain. Never shall I forget the sight that greeted my eyes on looking down. The sun, just breaking through the clouds, which until then had hung over the landscape, shone out in all its noonday splendor on the wonderful Yosemite Falls and the surrounding scenery. Spread out below us, above us, around us, there was revealed a picture painted by the Almighty Himself, a picture of such rare beauty, of such marvelous form and coloring, such an infinite variety of texture and tinting, that my soul was ravished. Every particle of fatigue, mental exhaustion, and muscle weariness, which had threatened physical collapse, vanished. My whole being thrilled with a winged sense of sublimity, grandeur, and beauty which I had never before experienced. I felt a spiritual uplift which brought tears of joy to my eyes. I seemed to stand in the visible presence of God, in the very Holy of Holies. In that moment's spiritual vision, a new life had entered into me. I had been recreated. All my hurts were healed. A new ambition surged through me, filled me with a desire to attempt great things, to do something bigger than I had before thought possible to me. Like the mythological giant Antaeus, whose strength was renewed every time he touched his mother earth, I felt a new and wonderful strength throbbing through my veins. I was a new man. Said the psalmist, I will lift mine eyes into the hills from whence cometh my help. There was a silence, a break in our conversation as I tried to take in all he was saying. And then he quietly added, Remind your mothers, when you are jaded and worn from the strenuous life of motherhood, when exhausted after a year's run, struggling with the daily problems that face you, it is to the everlasting hills you must turn for help, for health, for physical and spiritual renewal. You must go into God's laboratory, the great outdoors, where Mother Nature will take her own way with you. If you give yourselves to her unreservedly, she will lay her healing hand upon you, overhaul and repair your exhausted bodies, restore your flagging spirits, renew you physically and spiritually, and in due time send you back to your tasks, new women. So where were we? He said. Let's go back to the story. When he was in his early to mid-teens, he happened upon a dilapidated copy of a book stored away in an attic that was to be the turning point in his life. It was written by a Scottish man named Samuel Smiles. The book was called Self-Help. Smiles wrote it to give hope to the young boys and girls of England who were living in such dire poverty and circumstances. Orison said, I felt like a poor man who had just by accident discovered a gold mine. The book was a perpetual delight to me, and I treasured it as if it were worth its weight in diamonds, reading and rereading the precious pages until I had almost committed them to memory. It was a book of stories, stories of great men and some women who had overcome hard challenges in their lives. It lit a fire of hope in his own heart, and by sheer perseverance and push, he went on to graduate from the Harvard School of Medicine and the Boston University School of Law within a year of each other, as well as earning degrees in science and art. He put himself through school by working in hotels, which he later owned. Then came the depression of the late 1800s, and he experienced great financial loss, including the loss of his hotels. Yet it wasn't growing a hotel empire that held his heart. For 15 years, he had used every spare moment to gather stories of great men and women because he wanted to do for the youth of America what Samuel Smiles had done for the youth of England and for him. It was his way of paying it forward. He was preparing the manuscript from his thousands of pages of notes he had gathered when a fire broke out in the hotel where he was staying. He escaped the fire with nothing but his nightshirt on. His labor of years went up in smoke. He immediately walked down the street to buy some necessary clothes. As soon as this was attended to, he bought a 25-cent notebook, and while the ruins of the hotel were still smoking, began to write from memory the manuscript of his dream book. Of course, he was overwhelmed and heartbroken. He had little money, but with what he had, he bought a train ticket to Massachusetts, rented a small, plain room, and diligently set to work. After a short time, he made 3 manuscripts of the book, sent it to 3 local publishers, and all 3 of them offered to publish it. Pushing to the Front became a runaway bestseller. Within 25 years, there had been 250 editions in the United States alone. Letters poured in from presidents like William McKinley, Theodore Roosevelt, the British Prime Minister William Gladstone, kings and rulers from around the world telling him of how it had influenced their lives. A noted educator of the Italian Parliament strongly recommended the book be made obligatory reading in the schools of Italy, because he regarded it as a civilization builder. The government schools of Japan and Peru and other countries adopted it into their studies. The book inspired Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Harvey Firestone, and J.P. Morgan. Orison received thousands of letters from people in nearly all parts of the world, telling how the book had aroused their ambition, changed their ideals and aims, increased their confidence, and how it had spurred them to the successful undertaking of what they before had thought impossible. Many of these letters came from youths, telling how it had encouraged them to return to school or college after having given up in despair, to go back to vocations which they had left in a moment of discouragement, enheartened to take up other dropped or neglected tasks with new hope and new ambition, and how the book had proved a turning point in their careers, the cause of their success. He went on to write 50 more books, publishing nearly 2 books a year. He started a magazine to inspire hearts. It was called Success, and it failed in 1912. But that didn't faze him. In 1918, a new version appeared that stayed in print until after his death. Yet for all the fame and fortune, he knew the true secrets of happiness, and that's what he taught and lived. They are the treasures of the heart, that there is something greater than wealth, grander than fame, that character is success, and there is no other. As much as he wanted a home and a family, it didn't happen until he was in his 50s. He married a young woman, and together they had 3 children. He wanted to leave them a legacy that they would prize more than they would a money legacy. He wanted them to have a precious recollection, a sweet, beautiful memory of a happy childhood, a happy home, a kind, loving father. So he bought a farm on Long Island, and there he lived a blissful life at home with his wife and children. In after years, one of the children said, "Father looks at Mother as if she were an angel just come down from heaven and might at any moment unfold her wings and take flight again." This perfectly expressed his attitude toward his wife from the beginning to the end of their married life. He never seemed to have gotten over the joy and wonder of having won her. After he closed his story for the night, "I told my guest that after I told you about him, you were likely going to want him to come visit your homes too, and he said that would be his honor and his delight. I told him that I've been recording his book he wrote especially for the youths in school, Stories from Life. I'm posting the stories at mybelmond.com. I told him I put it in the Westward Expansion section under Great Lives, because he is certainly expanding our minds. He was happy that I included links to some of his books in the Joy section of the Mother's University. You know," he said with a twinkle in his eye, "the whole world is full of unworked joy mines. Everywhere we go, we find all sorts of happiness-producing material, if we only know how to extract it." "How can we ever thank you?" I asked him. He hugged me and said that if something he has written opens wider the door of some narrow life and awakens powers before unknown, he will feel amply repaid for his labor. My dear friend, Orison Swett Marden. Bye-bye until we meet again.